This podcast is brought to you compliments of Kaspersky Lab, protecting more than 300 million systems worldwide against internet threats.
Welcome back to the Digital Underground Podcast. My guest today is Matthew Green, who is a assistant research professor at Johns Hopkins University and a cryptographer. And just fair warning for everybody, we're going to be talking about math. So, you know, if that's not your thing, you might want to go do other things. But I wanted to talk to Matt today so that we could sort of sort out the fallout from what happened in Black Hat last week and some of the crypto-related talks there. And Matt, I don't even know, were you out there?
So I was in Las Vegas, but I was avoiding DEF CON. I was on a vacation. And I was told by my wife that if I went anywhere near DEF CON, I would need to find someone else to be married.
That's excellent advice.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, you know, there were a few talks at Black Hat, especially, that were kind of crypto-related stuff, all of which were pretty interesting from my point of view. And one that I think that really didn't get all that much attention in the media for whatever reason, maybe it's because reporters don't like math, is the talk that Alex Stamos and some other folks gave about, you know, it might be time to consider moving away from RSA. You know, we might be looking at, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10 years of useful life left out of the RSA algorithm. One, do you think that's the case? And two, if you think that's the case, what, you know, what is actually involved in everybody deciding to move away from it?
So, I don't really agree with that. I think that this was probably a little bit overhyped. So there are two different things that are going on, and both of them have been kind of munged together in that talk. One is that the RSA algorithm has actually been deprecated by the U.S. government. The U.S. government has decided to move away from RSA in the long term and move to elliptic curve cryptography as an alternative. And the reason is because RSA does have some weaknesses. And by weaknesses, what that means is in order to use it securely, you need much longer keys. We're going to have to keep making our keys bigger and bigger. It's not like RSA is going to be broken tomorrow. It's just that we have to keep cranking up our key size to keep the kind of security level that the government wants. So that's not the end of the world. It's just kind of a pain for us. The thing that Alex was also talking about, though, is a bunch of kind of recent mathematical advances by a professor named Antoine Zhu. And what he's been able to do is solve some very kind of fundamental mathematical problems, but only in, and this is the part that's kind of hard to explain, but only in some very specific settings. So it turns out that some of the problems that we rely on for cryptography can actually be broken. The mathematical problems can actually be solved, but only if you're using a certain kind of parameter, certain kind of field. And these fields are not things that we use, and they're not related to RSA. So it's kind of like circumstantial evidence. What Alex is saying is, well, if it's broken over here, then, you know, maybe we should be concerned that RSA might be broken as well. I don't see any real evidence for that, but you know, I can see the point of view.
So the specific parameters you're talking about, it's not something that's used in everyday applications of cryptography?
That's exactly right. In fact, it's not used in any kind of, you know, standard cryptography. It's kind of a research thing that, you know, some researchers proposed something and then some other researchers broke it, but it doesn't really apply to us.
Okay. But you said that the federal government is, you know, has already sort of made the move to ECC. Do you see other, you know, large scale, customers of cryptography, like financial services or browser vendors, doing the same thing at some point?
Yeah, I do. I think the one thing that's been holding people back is patents. So there have been some patents by Certicom and some other companies on elliptic curve crypto. Elliptic curve crypto is better in almost every way than RSA and other things. Everybody should be using elliptic curve crypto. The reason that people haven't done it is because of these patents, and the patents, I'm not sure when they're set to expire, but they're not going to last that much longer. So I do see that is going to become the standard in the next few years.
Okay. And is there a relatively simple way to explain the difference between RSA and ECC?
Well, I mean, one way to explain elliptic curve crypto is to say that it's, you know, it uses some, a lot of the same characteristics, you know, that RSA uses, but it has much shorter keys. That's the kind of the simple explanation. The longer explanation would probably be too complicated for this podcast, but we're able to use a lot of the same cryptographic kind of elements that we're able to use in other settings, but we're able to move them over to these elliptic curves, where there are a bunch of attacks that just don't work. They work in other settings. They don't work on these elliptic curves. And by getting rid of these attacks, we can use smaller keys and we can get a much more efficient crypto.
Okay. And if, you know, say the browser vendors decide that, you know, okay, we're going to make this move in the next, you know, X number of years, how difficult is that for them to actually do?
Well, I mean, a lot of browsers actually support elliptic curve crypto. So, for example, I think if you're using the latest version of Chrome, you already have the elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman Cypher Suite supported. I think Google actually uses that now if you connect to them. What's going to take some time is for all of these other specialized applications, you know, all these other, you know, specialized pieces of software that, say, financial services companies use to be slowly upgraded from, you know, elliptic, from other types of crypto to elliptic curve. So just getting the browsers there, I think, could happen tomorrow. Getting all of those other pieces of software could take years.
Oh, well, okay. And what about things like digital certificates? I mean, is it, that doesn't seem to be, wouldn't seem to be too difficult either.
No, I mean, certificates, you know, the big companies that produce them could easily switch to elliptic curve. The biggest problem right now is that, yeah, you do have kind of a set of browsers out there. People are using older browsers, and not everything supports it. So, you know, there's going to be a period of time where everybody kind of has to get on the same page. But once they do, I think it'll be easy to deal with.
Okay. And it doesn't seem like I haven't heard any sort of, you know, panic out of the crypto community about this kind of stuff. You know, not that they're generally prone to that sort of thing, but it doesn't seem like a lot of people are throwing their hands up in the air and saying, you know, we've got to rush out and make this move now.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not one of the kind of number theory people who works in this area, but I do know those people. And absolutely none of them agree with the panic and the RSA is going to be broken in 3 or 4 years kind of hype that you heard at DEF CON. I think it's great that people move away from RSA, but I absolutely disagree with the need to panic about it.
Okay. And in general terms, I mean, it's kind of amazing that the RSA algorithm has survived this long, honestly, isn't it? I mean, it's been almost, you know, 40 years or so?
Yes, it was invented in the late 70s, and it's kind of hung around for a long time. It's not the best algorithm we have, but people really like it.
It's their old familiar pair of jeans.
Easy to implement. You can, you know, you can do it yourself in Python in a few lines.
Yeah. Okay, so the other sort of major news crypto-related out of Black Hat was this breach attack that a few researchers, whose names I'm not going to try and pronounce because I will, you know, just destroy them. They essentially was kind of an extension of the crime attack that Juliano Rizzo and Tai Dong released last year, which, you know, was an attack on TLS compression and, you know, that sort of thing, and really good work. And so these guys, you know, sort of extended it, and but not relying on TLS compression. How much of a big deal do you think their work was?
So I think it's a neat kind of result. I mean, what they showed basically was that so there was this attack, this crime attack about a year ago, and what crime did is it showed that if you use compression with encryption, you can have some serious problems. There's an attack where you can, for example, learn people's cookies. Even when they're using a TLS or an SSL secured connection. And the reason is because compression has some weird kind of side effects when you use it with encryption, where you can learn, based on how long the messages are, what kind of information is in those messages. So they were able to actually get cookies, you know, one byte at a time, and learn your session cookie, which means they could log on to Gmail using your cookie or something like that. So
right.
Everybody thought, okay, great. So what we'll do is we'll turn off compression. TLS has built-in compression. We'll shut it down, and we solve the problem. But it turns out that compression combined with encryption happens all over the place. And another place it happens is at the HTTP layer. So HTTP, some sites support compression in the HTTP response, which means that if there are secrets, let's say cross-site request tokens or something like that, inside of the response that comes down from the web server, and that response is compressed and you're encrypting it, Well, you can use almost exactly the same techniques to get that information out of those responses. And so what Breach does is it takes all the things from crime and just turns them around on this new setting, and it's able to get that information as well.
And how practical of an attack is that to actually implement in the real world?
So, I mean, all of these attacks, you know, they rely on you getting maybe a piece of JavaScript running in the victim's browser. So how hard is it for me to get a piece of JavaScript running in your browser? Well, it's not that hard, you know. Like, if I control an access point at Starbucks and you're at Starbucks, then, you know, it's very easy for me to get a piece of JavaScript running there. And once I've got that JavaScript, you know, it takes anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours to get the information that you need out of it. So you have to leave the browser open for a while, but it is vulnerable.
Okay. And there's plenty of people sitting around with their browsers idle while they're doing other things.
Yep.
So are there practical defenses for this, or is it not something that, you know, is it another sort of theoretical thing that we don't necessarily need to worry about right now?
No, I mean, I think we do need to worry about it. I think we need to start recognizing that the basic defense is we need to stop using compression with encryption. And the problem is that compression and encryption, you know, you don't always realize that they're going together, right? So anytime you have something that gets compressed and then later gets encrypted, so for example, HTTP gets compressed and then later gets encrypted by TLS, you have this problem. And so it's not, you know, it's kind of like taking two drugs together and having a side effect. Well, if you took them at the same time, you know you're doing it and you shouldn't do that. But, you know, maybe you took one drug, you know, in the morning, and later on you take another drug and lost track of the fact that they might have a side effect. So that's the problem that you have there. So the obvious solution is to get rid of TLS compression. But then there are some specific things you can do. You can add some extra randomness. You can change the compression algorithm. You can do some stuff to defend against these specific attacks, and I hope people will. But really, we need to get rid of compression, except where we absolutely need it, and we've thought about the consequences.
Is all that compression just done to make things faster, obviously?
Yeah.
I mean, are there ways around that?
It's mostly done to make things faster. It's just, you know, we want to reduce the bandwidth coming down from the site, and, you know, maybe we don't need to worry about that as much anymore. Maybe networks have gotten so fast we can live without it.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, you know, people have home, you know, FiOS links that are incredibly fast these days.
That's true, but people also use mobile phones, so, you know, there's always going to be a reason to keep things small. So we just have to make people security aware. It used to be that it was all about efficiency, so you used compression. People didn't realize there was a security kind of side effect, and so we need to make people realize there is one.
That's a good point. So given all the stuff that, you know, we saw coming out of Vegas last week and stuff we've seen in the last couple of years, what are your, you know, how do you feel about kind of the state of, you know, web cryptography right now? I mean, are things okay? Are they getting a little brittle? Where do you think we stand?
So, I mean, I think we're in pretty good shape. I mean, if you look at the way the browsers are going, we're moving towards better TLS. TLS is getting stronger. We're getting more people using perfect forward secrecy, especially in the wake of this NSA spying site disclosures. So I think that everything's kind of positive there. I think things are on the right track. I think what we're actually seeing, which is great, is we're seeing a lot of researchers at these conferences get really into the crypto and look for kind of practical breaks. One of the things that I like to, you know, make a big deal of is that the academic community, the people who work at universities who do crypto, they almost never kind of reach out to the people who are actually developing things. And so there's been this kind of, you know, this lack of connection between all the eggheads who are doing crypto and the people who are using crypto. And so when I go to DEF CON or when I'm near DEF CON and I see these kind of reports, I think it's great news. I think it's great to see that people are actually applying these attacks and making things stronger.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. There always has seemed to be, you know, kind of those two sections of the crypto world, you know, the academic guys and then the guys, you know, working on these practical attacks, and it's good to see them talking to each other. Do you see any, you know, obvious weak points that you think are going to be troublesome in the next few years ahead?
Well, I mean, we are always going to have a lot of people. So the biggest thing that I would point out is that a lot of people are getting into using crypto. It used to be just a few people wrote crypto software, and now it seems like almost every piece of software has some kind of crypto in it. So, for example, Evernote. You know, you wouldn't think Evernote has anything to do with crypto, but Evernote has encryption for your notes, and of course they got that wrong when they built it. So, I mean, what we're going to see is almost every web app in the future that's written in JavaScript is probably going to have some little piece of crypto in it. And that means there's a lot of room for people to make mistakes. What we really need is some kind of set of tools that makes it easy for people to use encryption. And unfortunately, we're getting, you know, a bunch of new APIs and things like that that I don't think are very easy to use. And I think that the biggest danger we're going to have is not that the crypto itself is going to be broken, but people are going to misuse it just a little bit. And we're going to just, you know, it's going to keep us all busy for years fixing these problems.
Yeah, it does seem that, you know, a lot of the, you know, crypto problems we've seen in the last, you know, 8 or 10 years are implementation problems in a lot of cases.
I mean, there are so many ways to use crypto wrong.
Far more than there are to use it right, it seems. All right. Well, listen, Matt, thanks so much for your time. It was great, and thanks for helping me weed through all of this this difficult crypto stuff.
No problem.
All right. Have a good day. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Compliments of Kaspersky Lab, a world leader in internet threat protection for small, medium, and large enterprises. Visit Kaspersky.com for more information about their line of premium protection solutions.